Blood of the Summoned. Written, produced, and performed by Philip D. Adams. Chapter 10. The New Lord. Life for Daira had been reduced to a loathsome, humiliating routine. She ate little, slept less, and never left her house save to use the privy. She did what she could of the housework herself, since Molly and the rest of the servants had been scared off. She even tried to cook from time to time, although since she was not eating much, and her master fed only on human blood, there was usually no need. They had all the windows covered, so the house was dark enough for Dracovic to roam within by day. The two remaining housecarls, Rowan and Jessic, minded their posts dutifully, as they were now under Dracovic's thrall as well. Daira tried to keep herself groomed and well-dressed, but only because Dracovic demanded it, else she might have let herself go completely. Gone, however, was the comely, elegant woman who had once graced Whiston Hall. Sunken eyes and a gaunt, ashen face atop a bony frame were all that were left. Her days, when not being harangued and smacked about by Dracovic, were spent tending to what chores she could manage, which were few considering she had hardly ever lifted a finger her entire life. Her nights consisted largely of being the object of Dracovic's ravenous and increasingly bizarre sexual appetite, especially on the nights when he returned home from a hunt. Ordinarily, Daira might have become concerned by how pale and thin she had gotten. She might have rued her degrading descent from Lady of the House to Charwoman in Hall. She might have longed for the days when Rodigo was still master of the house, as unhappy as she thought she had been at the time. She might have mourned the loss of both her sons, one she would never see again, and the other she was too ashamed to see. She might have taken some solace in knowing that the man who beat and raped her nightly was not really her own brother, as much as he looked like him. She might have done and felt many things, but none of it had any meaning for her any longer. Since the night she fell into Dracovic's eyes, there was not left of her life beyond a crushing, all-consuming fear that she wore like a burial shroud. She was dead on the inside and numb on the outside. She had grown used to the degradation, and even the beatings had lost much of their sting. Wulfric had been a familiar face in the village for many years, but now his name was spoken only in hushed tones. Stories of Wulfric the Beast lurking about in the dead of night were spreading through the village. Every so often, another villager would go missing, or another body would be discovered naked and drained of blood. Those who had the means were packing up and moving away, and soon the population had dwindled to barely two-thirds of what it had been. Those who remained kept their heads down, their mouths shut, and their doors barred at night. Tonight, Daira had changed out of the drab, threadbare dress she wore when she cleaned and into one of her prettier dresses, a green linen frock trimmed in black silk. As commanded, she wore nothing underneath, and she brushed out her long hair, though it still hung limp and scraggly about her head and shoulders. She lit candles around the main hall and braced herself for another night of brutal sexual plundering while Dracovic lounged up in the loft. Jessic, who had been guarding the front gate, appeared in the main hall.
"Visitors, m'lady. At the front."
"Visitors? Who is it?"
"It's the Earl, m'lady. Come to see Lord Rodiger."
"The Earl? The Earl is here?"
"Yes, m'lady. And another man as well."
Daira's heart raced as she stood frozen in place, unable to think.
"Shall I show them in, m'lady?"
He waited as Daira remained motionless for a long moment.
"M'lady?"
"Yes, yes, by all means, show them in at once."
Daira did not recognize the first man who entered, though she presumed him to be a nobleman, resplendent as he was in a royal purple frock trimmed in gold and a gaudy array of fine jewelry. Tostig entered right behind, looking dashing in a striped green-on-green tunic and a red woolen cloak with fox fur collar. As they strode in, both men surveyed the main hall with squinted eyes and upturned noses, as if they were smelling something faintly rank. Their eyes fell upon Daira, who stood smiling as prettily as she might, hands clasped daintily in front of her, hoping they would not notice her trembling.
"My lords!"
She spread her dress and curtsied low. From her high-born upbringing, she knew to keep her head down and not to rise until she was bid.
"Lady Daira? My God, what's happened to this place?"
The Earl took his time looking about before finally saying,
"Up, up, let's have a look at you."
"Welcome, my lord. Such a pleasure, an honour."
"Lady Daira, I'd like you to meet my friend, Cato Sacros."
Sacros turned loose his most beguiling smile and took Daira's hand to kiss it, though his lips stopped short of her fingers.
Lady Daira?
Unbidden, the two men crossed the room and seated themselves at the table.
Can I offer my lord some refreshment? We have some ale, I believe?
Then I believe I'll have some.
He turned to Sacros.
My lord?
No.
I won't be a moment.
Tostig turned to Sacros.
What a hovel this place has become. I could puke.
Perhaps you should get to the bottom of it.
After a few moments, Daira returned with a bronze goblet and a flagon of old ale. She poured for Tostig, then stood back a step and stared at the floor as he sipped. Tostig winced, but swallowed anyway.
Ugh! Horrible! Lady Daira, what are you serving us? And why haven't we not been announced? Have you no servants?
Nay, my lord.
Well, where are they all?
Gone.
What? Speak up, woman.
They're gone, my lord.
What do you mean, gone?
They've left us, my lord.
You're joking. Where is your husband? I want to speak to him, now.
Daira swallowed hard.
He's not here either, my lord.
Oh, bloody hell. Well, when is he coming back?
I don't know, my lord. I'm afraid he's left as well.
Daira managed to steady her voice, but could no longer hold back the tears.
Left? Left you mean? Has he divorced you?
Nay, my lord, he's simply...
Abandon her,
came the voice of Wulfric from across the room. The two visitors hearkened to his voice as he approached.
Rodiger Whiston has abandoned his wife and home and taken up residence in York, if I'm not mistaken.
Who are you?
If it please my lord, I am Wulfric Stephenson of Gidley. I am Lady Daira's brother.
Sacros sat forward and eyed Dracovic, smiling as one who suddenly recognized a long-lost friend.
Gidley, is it? I thought that place was burnt to the ground. How is it you managed to escape?
Not escaped, my lord. Survived. I was left for dead, but managed to stay alive long enough to make my way here. Tragically, the rest of my family were not so fortunate. By the time I arrived here, my dear brother-in-law had already gone.
Oh, splendid. Well, doesn't that just fuck up the whole bloody works?
On the contrary, my dear Tostig,
said a visibly enthused Cato Sacros, keeping his gaze fixed upon Dracovic.
This is better than we could have planned. It seems to me a precious gift has been laid at your feet, quite unlooked for.
What do you mean?
I mean, this changes everything, my dear boy. Your problem is solved, if only you will recognize it.
What about Whiston?
Forget him. He's finished. He's nothing. Your business with Rodiger Whiston is done. You came here to speak to the Lord of Hamsterley, and now you have. Wulfric, my friend, how would you like to be Thane Wulfric of Hamsterley? Would that suit you?
What do I have to do?
Nothing. It is done. As of now, the title, the property, and all that were once Rodiger Whiston's province are now under your stewardship, including the lovely Lady Hamsterley.
Sacros shot a leering glance toward the weeping Daira.
Though I presume you've already been enjoying the pleasure of her companionship?
Indeed, quite enjoying it.
I suspect it as much.
My lord, do you two know one another?
I see no reason to be coy with you, Tostig. I will let you in on what the rest of us already know. Our friend here is Vrykolakos, same as me. Isn't that right, Dracovic? Oh, don't look surprised, my friend. You don't remember me, but I recognize you. Just so, my lord.
Really? Another one, eh?
You needn't worry. You'll not find a more loyal subject, I can assure you. Lord Wulfric, from this day, your Earl will have your unquestioned allegiance. Do you understand? He will see to all that you require and more. And when he has need of your service, he will call upon you. That's it. Tostig?
Brilliant.
The next afternoon, a small caravan arrived at Hamsterley. At its front were two of Tostig's own men-at-arms on horseback. They were young men, to be sure, but they were good-sized, well-trained, and well-armed. Behind them was a carriage from which emerged four servants sent by Tostig, one man and two women, all of whom appeared to be in their early 30s, plus a boy of about 12. All four servants looked hale and hearty, and all were dressed in peasant clothes that were nonetheless clean and new-looking, and all wore the same grim smiles. At the rear was a wagon laden with wooden boxes and barrels of various sizes, several large cloth sacks, earthen jars, and other items. The four servants immediately set to work unloading the wagon, while the two men-at-arms climbed down off their horses. One of them reached into a compartment at the back of the carriage, from which he produced a small decorative chest, heavy with gold shillings and silver pennies. He handed the chest gingerly to his companion, then removed a small leather pouch from the same compartment. The two of them made for the front gate, and Jessica led the men in. The two men found Dracovic seated at the table, where they presented him with the chest and pouch, while Dyra stood silently behind him. Dracovic anxiously opened the chest and began running his fingers through its contents, making a clinky cascade of gold and silver and grinning like a child with a toy.
"This should do us nicely for now, eh, love? What else do you have?"
The soldier handed the pouch to Dracovic, who promptly emptied it onto the table. Out came two bits of parchment, one folded flat and sealed, the other rolled and tied with a purple ribbon. He opened the flat one first. It read,
"Lord Wulfric, please accept these servants and provisions with my compliments. The guards are yours to command until such time as I send for them. Your predecessor's army will now fall under your command as well. You are to assemble them at your first opportunity. Please use the coin to purchase what you might from the village and to hire sufficient field workers for the harvest. Keep the rest. Signed, Tosta Godwinson, Earl of Northumbria. P.S. Be nice to the servants."
"Our lord is generous indeed."
Next, he unrolled the scroll. Like the letter, it was in Tostig's own hand and bore his seal and signature at the bottom. It read,
"I, Tosta Godwinson, Earl of Northumbria, in the name of His Majesty King Edward, do decree and ordain herewith that Wulfric Stephenson of Gidley is, and henceforth shall be, Thane of the Hamsterley Hundred and Lord Master of the Estate at Hamsterley, with all rights, privileges, titles, and properties attached and owing thereto."
"Well, that's done then. You may now officially call me my lord."
"Yes, my lord."
The sun was sinking low by the time Rodica parted ways with Uchtred just north of Dirthington. His road had taken him west toward Hamsterley, while Uchtred's route was east towards Durham. A few hours earlier, the two of them, along with Oslac, had stopped at the Crow River Inn at Aberford for a meal and a flagon of ale, after which Oslac turned east toward York and the others continued northbound. Their meeting with Harold Godwinson ended with nothing being resolved. They received no assurances from the Earl, nor did they offer any of their own. Still, all three thought it been well worth the effort. At least they were able to say what they had come to say, and as a result, Harold now appeared to understand the magnitude of the crisis at hand. Beyond that, it was clear that Rodica had not misjudged Harold's disposition towards his brother. There was no great love lost between them. Perhaps that meant that Harold would not necessarily rush to Tostig's side to put down a rebellion if it came to that. That gave him hope, but it also made the prospect of a revolt that much more palatable, and that gave him pause. The truth was that Rodica, when he took time to contemplate it, was not at all sure which way he would go if he had to decide. Historically, uprisings were terrible, bloody affairs that could often drag on for years. The English landscape was dotted with ruins of entire towns that had been wiped out by massacres, riots, and violent suppression. If the Thanes did rise up against Tostig, his retaliation would be swift and furious, Rodica had no doubt. But unless Tostig's hand were forced from below, there seemed no prospect that he would not continue to strangle the North to death with his self-serving malevolence. Rodica had decided that he would not take a side either way until he felt convinced that everything that could be done to mitigate the situation had been done. Now, having met with his fellow Thanes, having served up their list of grievances to Tostig, and having brought his case before the Earl of Wessex, matters seemed to have just about reached that threshold. The choice was made all the more agonizing because, if Morcar had it right, and it seemed increasingly that he did, whichever side Rodica came down on would be the way the others would go as well. Whether he liked it or not, it seemed he truly was leading the charge already. Rodica decided he would leave it for at least another day. Tonight he would be back at his old home and see his beloved Hamsterley and his precious Odie again. There would be plenty of time to wrestle with his decision tomorrow. It had been more than a month since Rodica left Hamsterley, and he was anxious to see his home again. Anxious in that he couldn't wait to get there, but also anxious in that he was concerned about what he might find. He had sent only one letter to Daira since that day, and her reply had been as abrupt as it was reassuring. "Everything's fine, leave me alone," was the message more or less. Since then, he neither sent nor received any correspondence from her, so he assumed all was well. "We shall see," he told himself. When he finally arrived, he dismounted to find both Jessica and Rohan guarding the front.
"Well, well, how goes it, boys?"
"Never better, my lord. How are things down York way?"
"Splendid, splendid."
Rodiger stepped up to the gate and waited for one of them to open it for him, but instead they stood firm and stone-faced.
"Are we forgetting our manners, mates?"
He stepped forward to let himself in, but the two guards closed ranks in front of him.
"Afraid we can't let you pass, my lord."
"I beg your pardon?"
He looked back and forth at the two of them. Neither one changed expression.
"Is this a joke? Step aside, now."
"Sorry, sir, you're not to be admitted."
"Not to be..."
Rodiger was mystified by the behavior and getting furious.
"Have you both lost your minds? Step back before I gut you both."
Two more guards that Rodiger did not recognize appeared on either side of him. He didn't see where they had come from. They kept their weapons sheathed, but stood at the ready, just in case they were needed.
"Sorry, my lord. Orders."
"Whose bloody orders? I'm the fucking order giver around here, and I'm ordering you..."
Suddenly, the gate opened from within, and there stood Wulfric, dressed like a grand duke at a royal ball, and grinning smugly.
"Not anymore."
"You? What the bloody hell are you doing here? I thought you were dead."
"Hate to disappoint you, old boy, but as you can see..."
He put a thoughtful finger to his chin.
"The question is, what are you doing here? I thought you'd left for good."
"I've come to see my wife and my boy, not that it's any of your bloody business."
"Oh, but it is. Everything that goes on here is my business, didn't you know?"
He reached into his sleeve and pulled out the rolled up parchment.
"It seems you've been dispossessed."
He unrolled the parchment and held it out at arm's length with both hands for Rodiger to read.
"Perhaps you don't recognize the Earl's hand, but surely you'll recognize his seal. Hamsterley is under my lordship now."
He withdrew the parchment and slid the roll back up his sleeve.
"I don't believe this. This is Westonhall. It's mine. I built it. And my father before me and his father before him. This estate belongs to me, to my family."
"But, dear brother-in-law..." "I am your family. And now I'm Lord Thane, and you're nothing."
Rodiger was spitting mad.
"Where's Daira? Where's my son? I want to see Odie right now. Do you hear? Right fucking now."
"About that. Pity, actually. Poor young Odenton met with a bit of an accident a few weeks back. Bled right out. Nothing we could do, really."
Rodiger stood shocked as the meaning of Wulfric's words took hold.
You murdered him? You bastard! You killed my son!"
He lurched for Dracovic, but once again, Rohan and Jessica stepped in to constrain him, and he withdrew.
"I'll be back, you son of a whore! And you can bet I won't be alone next time, do you hear me?"
"Ah, yes, I'd nearly forgotten. Do be a good chap and return my army to me straight away. I'll be needing it, you see."
"Your army?"
"Why, of course. Those men are under the command of the Thane of Hamsterley, are they not? That means they take their orders from me now."
"I wouldn't count on it."
"Oh, they will. They will do exactly as I say, and very soon, so will you."
Dracovic looked over Rodiger's shoulders to the two men-at-arms who had inched up behind him.
"Seize him!"
Before the men could act, Rodiger had his sword unsheathed. He dropped to one knee, spun around to the right, and sliced at the back of the first man's legs, hamstringing him. The man reeled backward with a shriek and dropped to the ground. Then, with one fluid motion, Rodiger rose to his feet and slashed upward, catching the other man under his chin, slicing his neck open in a fountain of blood and nearly taking his head right off. With two lightning strokes, both men lay bleeding to death. Rodiger turned back around and faced Dracovic, his sword dripping blood and poised for another attack. Dracovic had backed up several steps, leaving Rohan and Jessica standing between him, eyes wide, mouths agape, and blades drawn.
"Go ahead, boys. Seize me."
He stood like a great cat ready to pounce as his eyes darted back and forth between the two, daring them to come forward and meet his steel. When it became clear that neither Jessica nor Rohan intended to make a move, Rodiger sheathed his sword and stepped back.
"Like I said, I'll be back, your fucking lordship."
He turned and headed toward his horse. Just before climbing into the saddle, he turned and called back.
"You should have taken my mount first, as any real thane would have done."
Although the meeting had been hastily assembled, there were many more Thanes gathered today than the 12 that sat around Uchtred's table only a few days ago. Uchtred himself counted 26 crowded into his modest hall.
Is Rodica coming?
I should bloody well think so. He's the one who asked me to bring everyone here. I didn't expect so many, though.
They all want to hear how it went with Wessex. They want to know...
Lord Rodica of Hounsterley, my lords.
Rodica entered, grim-faced, amid the murmurs of his fellow thanes. If he was surprised to see such a throng, he did not show it. 26 staunch bearded faces looked upon him from every angle as Rodica stood at the head of the table. He scanned the room with a faint smile, silently acknowledging their presence and saluting their courage.
How now with Wessex?
The rest waited for Rodica to speak. He did not keep them waiting long.
My lords, we cannot expect any succor from the Earl of Wessex. What Harold Godwinson may or may not do is beyond my knowledge. In that regard, we're no better informed than we were when we set out.
Rodica expected an uproar after that, but surprisingly the Thanes, to a man, held their tongues.
My guess is that Wessex is waiting to see what we'll do next before committing himself, which, if true, would mean that while certainly we cannot rely on his support, neither perhaps can Tostig.
Once again, Rodica surveyed the faces of the men before him. Every one of them seemed to be hanging on his words. He placed both hands on the table and leaned forward.
My lords, before I say anything more, there is something you must know.
He looked down for a long moment, then raised his head and continued.
It seems that I am no longer the Thane of Hamsterley.
Rumblings arose from the group as half the men were repeating to the other half what Rodica had just said.
Our Lord Earl, in his wisdom, has seen fit to strip me of my land and title.
What? Treachery!
Therefore, if it is your judgment that I no longer have valid standing among you...
Nonsense! You're still the Thane of Hamsterley, Lord Rodica.
Tostig can suck my cock!
Hear, hear! Aye!
Thank you, my lords. And I intend to retake my birthright if it's the last thing I do. But for now...
We will see it done, my lord.
Aye! But my lord... My lords, I would not have any of you or your families harmed on my account. I would not ask any man to take up arms against his own countrymen. Each of you must decide what course you will support and what actions you will take. As for me...
Rodica looked long into the eyes of Uchtred to his right, then Oslak to his left, then around the room, as if to address each man directly.
I am anxious to see Tostig's head on a pike!